It's best not to risk it.
We put in the earplugs first, and then the earmuffs that we had for the shooting range. Since the combination of the two protected our ears from the sound of gunshots, we figured it would be enough to protect ourselves from the siren song. After all, in the Odyssey, Odysseus's men had passed the sirens by plugging their ears with beeswax. This technology was far more advanced than that. We couldn't talk much since we couldn't hear. So I joined Chris and Danielle at the front of the boat, looking out as we soared over the water. Danielle had her elbows resting on the railing, her face lifted up, her hair blowing in the wind like she was a mermaid. Chris had his arms outstretched, like he was flying. They both looked like they belonged out there. With the headphones blocking the wind, it was more peaceful than ever. I took a deep breath and lifted my face to the sky, inhaling the fresh, salty air. In this moment, it was so easy to pretend that we were five normal teens, skipping school to enjoy a day on a boat. Then I saw a movement in the corner of my eye, a hand pounding on the window. I turned around and saw Kate, her face contorted, screaming something as she used her free hand to bang on the glass. I couldn't hear her, but she was yelling so hard that a vein popped out of her neck. She pointed at the steepest cliff, and while I wasn't great at lip reading, it looked like she was begging us to go that way. My eyes met Blake's, and we nodded in agreement about what was going on. Kate must be hearing the siren song, which meant that the siren was still here. It would have made sense for us to go straight for her, except for one problem. The direction that Kate was pointing led to a group of jagged rocks, the water crashing around them. Docking the boat there would be impossible. The rocks would shred it and us apart. Instead, Blake steered the boat away from the cliff. Kate pounded harder on the window, yelling and pulling at her wrist that was cuffed to the beam. She pulled so hard that the metal cut into her skin, blood dripping down her hand and onto the floor. She kept screaming, and as we drew closer to the shore, she reached out with her other hand and held it out to the cliff. Her face scrunched with determination, and a few small rocks broke free from the cliff, crashing into the water. She was trying to use her power. I'd never seen the extent of Kate's power, but I always had a feeling that hers could be the most dangerous of all of ours. After all, she could potentially cause earthquakes, or cave-ins, or landslides. She could create disaster on a mass scale. But Kate was the most peaceful of the five of us, which was why I'd always suspected that she'd been given such a strong ability. She would never use her power to destroy. But a Kate who was desperate to reach the siren? I couldn't be so sure. We were far enough out in the water right now that she couldn't do much damage. She was too far away from her element to control it. But Blake was bringing the boat closer and closer to the shore. We had to get Kate under control. If we didn't, I didn't want to know what she might do to get us to that cliff. I grabbed the last earplugs and earmuffs from the bag, held them up to show Chris and Danielle, and pointed to Kate. They nodded and hurried over to her, grabbing her and holding her down. She yelled something I couldn't hear and struggled against them, but it was no use. She was the smallest of us all, and she stood no chance against them. But that didn't stop her from trying to fight. I was wrestling the earplugs into her ears when suddenly, she stopped fighting us. "What happened?" I asked, though my voice sounded muffled and strange. I could only hear it in my head. Kate moved her lips in reply, but I couldn't hear what she was saying. So she grabbed her phone with her free hand and typed something on it, showing it to me. "We're out of range of the siren song. You can all take your earplugs out now." I moved to remove my earmuffs, but stopped myself. "How do we know you're not trying to trick us?" I asked. "What if you just want us to take off our earmuffs so we hear the siren and drive towards the cliff?" She smiled and grabbed the extra earplugs from my hand, the ones I'd been trying to force into her ears. She put them in, covered them with the extra pair of muffs, and typed something else on her phone. I was telling the truth. We're out of range of the siren. But good job for being cautious. Smiley face. I showed the others the messages, and we all removed our earmuffs and earplugs. Once sure that she was telling the truth about being out of range of the siren, I unlocked the cuff around Kate's wrist and called on my power to heal the places where the metal had cut into her skin. For a moment there, I thought you would saw your hand off to get to that siren, I said, checking her wrist and ensuring that it was completely healed. What did she say to you? Oh, just that she knew all of the secrets of the universe, everything from the past, present, and future, and that she was on our side on the war against the Titans, and would share all of her knowledge with us if we met her at the bottom of the cliff. Kate chuckled as if it were ridiculous. Telling you about it now, I know it was a lie. But something about the tone and cadence of her voice, I don't know. She shrugged and looked off into the distance. It made me believe her. We neared the shore, and Blake steered the boat towards the closest dock. It belonged to one of the huge houses on the outskirts of town. Judging by how the house had no lights on, how the snow around it was untouched, and how their boat was covered up, I guess the house belonged to one of the many retired couples who only stayed in Kinsley over the summer. Blake tied up our boat, and we gathered our weapons, hopping onto the dock. Are you glad you listened to the siren song? I asked Kate. Because you kind of, well, you freaked out back there. You tried to use your powers on us. If we hadn't been so far out in the water, who knows what you would have done? Except that we were out on the water, so I knew going into it that I wouldn't be able to do anything to hurt you, she said, sounding absolutely confident that she was right. Barely anyone has ever heard the siren song and survived. If I hadn't tried, I would have regretted it forever. Chris jumped off the boat, landing right next to us.
The two of you can chat about this later, he said, securing his gun in his holster and looking up at the looming cliff. Right now, we have a siren to catch.
Chapter 9. Compared to locating the siren, capturing her proved rather simple. We hiked up the trail to the top of the cliff with our earplugs and earmuffs on. We surprised her by coming at her from behind, and before she knew we were there, Chris shot her with a tranquilizer bullet full of gray energy. She was on the ground in seconds. Lucky for us, the siren's greatest weapon was her song, not her physical strength. In fact, with her porcelain skin, long wavy hair, tiny frame, and huge eyes, she looked more like a doll than an ancient monster. She was so petite that bringing her from the cliff to the training room in Darius's basement was a breeze. We only removed our earplugs and muffs once she was bound to a chair inside the shooting range and shut inside. The range had a soundproof glass window, so it was the perfect place to keep her contained.
She looks so sweet.
Chris shook his head, examining her through the window.
Are we sure she's actually a monster? She had Kate convinced that she would tell us the secrets of the universe if we crashed our boat into a cliff.
Blake crossed his arms, glaring at the siren.
She's a monster, all right. She was in Kerberos because she sided with the Titans in the Second Rebellion. Don't forget that while we're questioning her.
Speaking of, Kate said, joining us and glancing at the siren. How exactly are we going to question her?
We're going to go in there and use enough gray energy on her that she's confused enough to answer our questions without a second thought, Chris said. Did the siren song mash up your brain or something? Because that was all part of our original plan.
But when we came up with the plan, we weren't counting on our hostage being a siren, Kate pointed out. To get information from her, we need to be able to hear her, which means talking to her without the earplugs and muffs on, which means
we can't talk to her without getting hypnotized by her song, Danielle interrupted.
So all of this was for nothing. We were silent as the reality of the situation sunk in. We'd done such a great job of capturing the siren.
It was so easy. Maybe too easy. But we'd gone through so much trouble to get her here. There had to be a solution to this problem. Maybe it wasn't all for nothing, I said, an idea forming in my mind. Kate, what about her song made it so hypnotizing? You said it was the tone and cadence of her voice, right?
Yep, Kate nodded. We can't let her talk to us, and we can't ask her to write out her answers to our questions because with her hands free, nothing would stop her from pulling off our earmuffs and forcing us to listen to her.
So what should we do? Blake asked, reaching for his gun. Shoot her in the heart and then wait for another monster to escape that we actually can question?
We might not have to do that. I eyed up his gun, relaxing when he let his hand fall away from it. The siren's voice is hypnotizing because of its tone and cadence, not because of what she's saying. It's the quality of her voice that makes people believe her. So, what if we took that away from her? How would we do that? Danielle looked at me as if I were a complete idiot. Unless you know a spell like the one Ursula used on Ariel in The Little Mermaid to take away her voice? Nothing that complicated. I purposely ignored how Danielle was making fun of me, since we all knew that real witches didn't use spells. But I have had the flu before. And as a singer, I know that the worst part about the flu is that it ruins my voice, sometimes for the entire month.
And my brother has the flu right now. Kate smiled, her eyes lighting up. He's so contagious that he spread it to everyone in my extended family who hadn't gotten a flu shot. They're calling him Typhoid Steven.
I looked through the glass at the siren, who was just beginning to stir, and said, I think it's safe to bet that they don't give out flu shots in Kerberos. Chapter 10. It didn't take Kate long to go to her house and come back with a plastic bag full of used tissues. Gross! I backed away when she got close with the bag, even though I'd had my flu shot.
I need to do this quick, she said, putting on her earplugs and earmuffs. I looked it up, and the flu virus will only remain active on these tissues for 15 minutes. It took me 5 minutes to get here, so I have 10 minutes to get that siren infected.
5 minutes? Blake smirked. Did you, the perfect rule-following student, speed?
Kate lifted the earmuff away from her ear.
What was that? She asked.
Don't worry about it, I said, although the thought of Kate speeding was pretty amusing. Go infect that siren. 2 days later, the siren's porcelain button nose had turned red from all of her sniffling and sneezing. We'd untied her from the chair, since she didn't pose a physical threat, and she was lying on the floor, her arms splayed out around herself. She was so sick that she could barely eat the food we'd given to her, because she had to keep taking breaks to cough, sneeze, and blow her nose.
I thought that once she got the flu, she would look more normal,
Chris said.
But nope, she's still totally hot.
I rolled my eyes. Too bad she's an ancient monster who lures people to gruesome deaths.
Tell me about it, Chris agreed. So, what's the plan from here?
We see if it worked, Kate told him. You'll come into the room with me, you'll be wearing earmuffs, and I won't. I'll chat with the siren. If her powers work on me, use your power over air to stop me from doing anything destructive to myself. I won't be able to do much to fight back, since the room is empty of anything connected to the Earth.
And if her powers don't work on you, then the five of us can go in there and question her, I said.
Exactly, Kate smiled. Let's hope that's what happens, because I really don't feel like killing her and capturing another monster.
Chapter 11. Just like we'd hoped, now that the siren had the flu, her voice had no power over us, which was how the five of us found ourselves gathered around her in the shooting range, with her bound to the chair again. and despite all of her sobbing and wailing, we refused to let her go.
"Why are you doing this to me?" she pleaded, struggling against the ropes. "I don't know anything. Just set me free, and I'll go far away from here and leave you all alone. I promise."
She widened her eyes and looked at each of us, as if appearing all innocent would be enough to make us believe her. Danielle sat down and leaned against the wall, trying to balance the tip of her knife on the ground. It kept falling to its side. "Your powers don't work on us now," she said, barely paying the siren any attention. "The faster you tell us what we want to know, the faster we'll let you go." This time, when she let go of the knife, it stood straight, balanced on the tip. "Wow," she said, staring at it with her mouth dropped open. "I didn't actually expect that to work."
"It only worked because I helped," Chris laughed, and the knife floated towards him, the handle settling in his grip. "No," he said when he turned to the siren, the tip of the knife facing her. "I don't want to use this on you, but I will if I have to."
"Seriously?"
The siren laughed, tossing her long hair behind her shoulders. But the laugh quickly turned into a cough, and she took a few wheezing breaths to collect herself.
"You would never use that on me."
Chris lowered the knife, which proved the siren's point.
"He might not."
Blake grabbed the knife and stepped forward, towering over the siren.
"But I will. We need answers, and since you tried to kill us when we were out there on the ocean, we don't owe you anything. Now, we'll ask you nicely one more time. How are you and the others escaping Kerberos? And how do you come back after we kill you?"
"How could I possibly know?"
she purred, fluttering her eyelashes at Blake.
"I'm just a lowly siren. All I wanted was to return to the world to sing and relax near the water. You could join me if it would please you. All you have to do is let me go and come with me. We could be such wonderful company for each other, don't you think?"
"It's trying to play you." I rushed forward to stand next to Blake, clenching my fists to control the heat coursing through my veins. "Don't believe a thing it's saying."
"How sweet."
The siren smiled, still focused on Blake.
"Is your girlfriend jealous?"
Blake smirked and flicked on his lighter, balancing a ball of fire on his palm.
"What would I want with a life near the water?"
he asked, the light reflecting dangerously in his eyes as he stepped closer to the siren.
"Fire's my element."
Before he could get any closer to her, droplets of water formed above the fire and rained down on it, extinguishing it.
"Let's not show off too quickly," Danielle said, her voice tight. "Give it a chance to talk on its own first."
"Can you please stop calling me an it?"
the siren hissed, her eyes narrowing in the first monstrous display we'd seen from her all day.
"I have a name. Philzepia."
Chris laughed, and the siren bristled at his reaction.
"There's no way we'll be able to pronounce that," he said. "So, we'll just call you Tina. It's close enough, right?"
Tina frowned and stuck her chin in the air, apparently not happy with her new nickname. Then she sneezed and rubbed her nose on her shoulder, ruining whatever snobbish effect she was going for.
"Stupid mortals," she said, sniffing again. "As if you'll ever be able to get anything out of me."
"I think it's time to use that knife now," Danielle said, reaching to grab it from Chris.
"Not so fast," Kate jumped in. "We have other options."
"Oh, yeah?"
Danielle raised an eyebrow.
"Such as what?"
"Gray energy."
I did a double take, making sure it was Kate who had said those words. It was.
"Do you even know how to use gray energy?" I asked her. "I thought you were against using it." "I was," she said, "but I'm also logical. We have a serious problem on our hands with the portal to Kerberos weakening, so we need to know how to use every possible weapon at our disposal, including gray energy. I've been practicing.
Impressive.
Danielle stood up and brushed imaginary dust off her leather pants.
I didn't know you had it in you. Then I guess you underestimated me.
Kate straightened her shoulders and leveled her gaze with Danielle's.
Come on, let's get started.
Chapter 12. After an hour of forcing the siren, Tina, to drink water infused with gray energy, we had nothing to show for it but a confused, tired siren who still hadn't given us answers to our questions. I was beginning to think that this was hopeless, but we hadn't given up yet. Danielle held Tina's head as she tipped up the glass of water, forcing her to drink.
Now, let's try this again, she said, dropping her hand down to rest at the hilt of her sword.
How did you get through the portal from Kerberos, and how did Orthrus come back after we killed him?
I don't know.
The siren yawned, her head lulling to the side. Danielle splashed the rest of the water in her face, and she jerked up, her eyes hooded as she looked around.
Where am I? She slurred. Why do I feel like I've been run over by a chariot?
I stood up, sick of trying the same thing and getting nowhere.
This isn't working, I said. All the gray energy is just making her confused, and even if she knows the answers, she won't be able to tell them to us if she's so out of it that she can't remember how she got here.
Or maybe she's just pretending she doesn't remember anything, so that we'll get all compassionate and stop questioning her, Danielle said, holding up the empty glass. I'm going to fill this back up so we can try again.
No.
Blake stepped in front of Danielle, blocking her path.
Nicole's right.
Of course you're on her side.
Danielle rolled her eyes.
Why am I not surprised?
It's not about sides.
He stood strong, his eyes blazing with determination.
It's about facts. Gray energy is what the elders use to manipulate memories. We barely know what we're doing with it, but we're definitely messing with her memories. And it's not helping. If anything, it's making this worse. We need to try something else.
Like what? Danielle asked. I can try using white energy to take away the gray energy we made her drink, I said. I'm not sure if it'll work, but if it does, at least she'll remember how she got here.
Good idea,
Blake said.
You think it'll work on the siren the same way it did when you removed the gray energy that Danielle put into your tennis racket last month?
You told her about that?
Danielle's mouth dropped open, and she stepped away from Blake.
I told you not to say anything.
And you promised that you would stop using gray energy. And then you turned around and used it on Nicole, he said. So let's call it even.
Whatever.
She huffed and glared at me.
Just because you could remove gray energy from a tennis racket doesn't mean you can remove it from a siren.
Maybe not. I stepped closer to the siren, kneeling down so my gaze was level with hers. Despite her eyes being watery from the flu, they were an otherworldly, startling shade of sea green that made it clear she wasn't human. She was so tired that she could barely keep them open.
Can one of you untie her hands? I asked the others.
It'll be easier to do this if my palms can connect with hers. Her lips quivered as Chris unbound her wrists, but she didn't turn away from my gaze.
Why are you all doing this to me?
She asked again, her voice shaky and meek.
I swear, I don't know anything. Won't you please let me go?
The gray energy confused you. I reached forward and held onto both of her hands so our palms met. I'm going to use white energy to push away the gray energy clouding your thoughts. Then, if you answer our questions and you can prove that you were telling the truth, we'll let you go.
Deal?
And if I still don't know the answers? She asked.
Blake flicked on his lighter and passed a ball of fire back and forth in his hands.
If you know the answers after Nicole cleans the gray energy out of your system, then you should tell us everything you know, he said. If you do, then we'll let you go. If you don't...
He stared at the ball of fire, the flames growing higher, and let the threat hang in the air.
Then you'll burn me?
She laughed, but it was raspy, and broke up when she started coughing.
You don't have it in you to hurt me. None of you do.
Blake held her gaze and sent a few sparks flying onto her arm.
Ow! She flinched. That hurt.
He closed his fist, the fire disappearing within it.
It'll hurt more if you don't cooperate, he warned.
Tina sniffed, rubbing the place on her arm that was already turning red where the sparks had burned her. I looked up at Blake and swallowed. Even though I knew he was doing this to benefit us, in that moment, I couldn't help feeling slightly scared of him. But then I thought about Orthrus, and about the hideous harpy that had tried to kill us last month in the cave. None of us had thought twice before attacking either of them. And while Tina might not have her power right now, she was still dangerous. How many innocent people had she lured to their deaths? She'd also sided with the Titans during the Second Rebellion, meaning that she'd wanted to destroy the Olympian rulers and let the world slip into chaos. As I took her hand back in mine, I reminded myself that while she might look like a China doll, she was still dangerous. I couldn't let myself forget that.
Will this hurt? She asked me, her voice soft. What are you about to do?
No, I said. I'm a healer. But if you don't give my friends and me the information that we need, I will not waste a bit of my energy to heal you after they finish with you. With that, I closed my eyes, my hand still wrapped around hers, and cleared my mind of everything but the white energy surrounding me. Last month, I had to focus really hard to absorb the energy and channel it. But now, I did it on instinct. Warmth flooded my body as the white orbs of light rushed through my veins. And I directed it through my palms and into the siren, pushing the gray energy out of her body and back out into the universe. Once I could feel no more remnants of gray energy inside of her, I pulled my hands out of hers and stepped back. Her eyes were clearer now, less tired, and her skin flushed with renewed life. I stood up to look down on her, even though at 5 feet 4 inches, I wasn't exactly intimidating.
Do you remember anything now? I asked.
I remember how I got here. She sneezed again, and now that her arms were free, she reached for a tissue and blew her nose. I never knew that such a loud sound could come out of such a tiny creature.
But I still don't have the answers to your questions, so you might as well plunge that sword into my heart right now and put me out of my misery.
You would like that, wouldn't you? Danielle took a few steps forward, her hand on the hilt of her sword.
Because you know that if we don't, you'll be able to come back.
The siren just stared at her, saying nothing.
Well? Danielle prodded her.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're lying, Kate said, so softly that it was eerie how confident she sounded.
You don't want to die, and you're used to using your voice to convince people that everything you say is true, so you've never had anyone doubt you. But I don't believe you for one second. You're lost, then,
the siren smiled, and I knew at once that Kate was right. Why did we think the siren might go along with us and answer our questions? She was thousands of years old. I couldn't fathom how young we must seem to her. If we wanted information, we weren't going to get it by being nice. I picked my bow off the floor and got into stance and readied the arrow. Blake, I said, keeping my eyes on the siren. Give me fire. I'll make sure to aim anywhere except her heart.
He raised an eyebrow in question, as if asking if I was sure about this. But I didn't budge, so he tossed a fireball at the arrow, lighting up the tip. The siren's eyes were locked on mine, like she was daring me to go through with it. She must not think I would. I pulled back on the string, ready to shoot.
"Wait,"
she said, and while I didn't shoot, I didn't move either.
"I can tell you what you want to know. Just don't shoot me with that, please."
I looked over at Kate, and she nodded for me to lower my weapon. I did.
"Want me to put the fire out?" Danielle asked.
"No," I said. "Keep it burning, in case I need to shoot fast." I didn't really need the fire. Blake could aim at the siren from this distance. And a shot from the arrow would hurt, even if it weren't flaming. But the siren seemed terrified of fire, and we needed to use every intimidation technique possible. Kate stepped closer to the siren, her hand on her gun.
"First question," she said. "How did you, Orthrus, and the Harpy get here? And why did you come first instead of the powerful monsters, like the Titans?"
"That's two questions," Tina said. "Not one."
Blake threw a fireball straight at her hair, which was draped over the back of the chair, as long and shiny as a mermaid's.
"Put it out," she yelled, followed by a string of curse words that I couldn't have imagined coming out of her delicate mouth.
Danielle just crossed her arms and smirked.
"We were able to escape because the portal between Earth and Kerberos is weakened,"
the siren said, her words coming out fast as she eyed up her flaming hair.
"The portal detects magic to know what to keep out. It's getting weaker every day. But for now, only those of us who aren't as powerful are able to sneak through. The big guys are still stuck."
She looked at Danielle expectantly.
"There's your answer. So put out the fire now."
"Only because I hate the smell of burning hair."
Danielle flicked her wrist at the cup of water on the floor, and the water shot up into an arc, dumping straight onto the siren's head. The fire sizzled out, but the bottom half of her hair was burned to a crisp.
"Wow," Chris whistled. "You're going to want to see a stylist about that."
"Shut up,"
she said, although the power behind the words was lost, since it was followed by a fit of coughing.
"How much longer until the portal is weak enough for the Titans to get through?" Kate asked.
"I don't know," she answered. "I didn't put the portal there."
Blake flicked his lighter, and the siren flinched back.
"But if I had to guess, it'll be a few more months for it to get to that point," she said,
relaxing when Blake put the fire out.
"Around the time of the summer solstice."
"Good," Kate said. "And I have one more question."
The siren glared at her, but said nothing. At least she understood that she wasn't in the position to barter.
"What happens when we shoot you in the heart with our weapons?"
"We disappear," the siren said, not missing a beat.
"But you know that."
I raised my bow, which had the intended effect of making her shrink away.
"Where do you go when you disappear?" I asked.
"We thought we'd killed Orthrus, but he came back."
"How?"
Blake focused on the fire on my arrow, and it grew taller. But the siren still said nothing.
"Would the same thing happen if I shot you through the head?"
I asked, raising my weapon to aim at the proposed target.
"Would you disappear?" "Why don't you try it and find out?" she said sweetly. "That's a yes," Kate said, and I nodded, since I'd already assumed so. "Don't do it, or you'll be giving her what she wants."
Instead, I shot the arrow so it grazed her arm, slicing the skin open enough to draw blood. She threw her head back and screamed, and I strung another arrow through my bow, ready to shoot again.
"When we disappear, we go back to Kerberos."
She turned away from my bow, as if that would be enough to stop me from shooting her again. Once there, we heal, and when our strength returns, we leave again. Try as you may, no human weapon will be strong enough to kill any of us.
We're not human, Chris said. We're witches, and Nicole's a demigod.
You all have human blood in you, the siren shrugged. Same difference.
If none of our weapons will kill you, then what will? Blake asked.
The siren tossed back her charred hair and laughed. As if I'll ever tell you.
I'm going to ask you the question again. Blake flicked on his lighter, creating a fireball in his hand.
If our weapons don't kill you, what will?
He reached forward and held the fire to the siren's leg, which was bound to the chair. She let out a blood-curdling scream, struggling so much that the chair tipped over, dumping her into the fetal position on the floor. Blake leaned next to her and held the fire in the same spot, burning her skin until she begged him to stop.
Are you ready to answer the question now?
He asked.
Never, she hissed, spitting into the flames.
Danielle walked over to the siren and unsheathed her sword.
Then you have no use to us anymore, she said, plunging the weapon straight into the siren's heart.
The siren let out one last final gasp and disappeared. Kate rushed to where the siren had been sprawled out only seconds ago, as if she might still be able to find her there. But she was gone.
What was that for? She asked Danielle, pointing at the empty space where the siren had been. She might have told us what we wanted.
Danielle stepped back, casually holding the sword that was smothered with the siren's blood.
No, she wouldn't have, she said calmly. Not if she wanted to preserve her own life, which I can guarantee you that she did.
We could have made a deal with her, I said. If she told us how to kill the monsters permanently, we could have spared her life.
And would we have stuck to that bargain?
Danielle smiled, as if she thought she had me cornered.
Yes, I stood strong. She might not have expected us to. She might not have even done so if she were in our shoes. But we're better than that. We would have honored the deal.
Except that you just said it yourself. She wouldn't have expected us to stick with it, Danielle said. So she would have had no reason to trust us with the information we'd asked for. Trying to talk to her for any longer would have been a waste of our time.
Kate stepped between us, putting her arms out to stop the fighting.
What's done is done, she said, looking back and forth between the two of us. But at least we know that somehow there's a way to permanently kill these monsters. We just need to find someone else, someone on our side, so we know they can be trusted, who can help us figure out what that way is.
Chapter 13. When I woke up the next morning, one of the first things I noticed was a package resting on my windowsill. I'd been checking every day since the last time I'd woken up to find something there. It had been a necklace with an A carved into the pendant. I kept the necklace safe in my jewelry box, since I didn't want to risk losing it during training. While I couldn't say for sure, I suspected it was a gift from Apollo, my father. Ever since receiving the necklace, I'd been hoping to hear from him again. So I pushed open the window and reached for the package. It was a brown parcel tied together with twine. I undid the knot and opened it, revealing a handwritten note inside. To get the answers you seek, all you must do is touch the book and ask. A. It was written in perfect script. I read it a few more times, as if there would be a secret message to decode, but came up with nothing. The note must be literal. I had to let the others know, but first, I had to write back to A, because I needed answers too. So I pulled a piece of paper out of a notebook and started to write. Hi. I'm not quite sure what to say. I guess this is the first time we've ever talked. If this is who I think it is, there's so much I want to ask you. But it's too much to say in a note.
Will we ever be able to meet? I didn't sign it, because he would know who it was from. Instead, I folded it up and wrapped it inside the parcel, writing 2A on the outside. I placed it on the windowsill and then texted the others. Because if what Apollo had said in the note was correct, then this might be the clue we needed about how to access the book. Today, after school, we had to test it out for ourselves. Chapter 14. I showed the others the note when I saw them at school, and that afternoon, we sat in Darius's living room, gathered around the Book of Shadows.
So you think this note is literal?
Kate asked after reading it again. She reached for the book, but pulled back, as if afraid she might hurt it.
We can just touch the book, and it will somehow answer us?
That's what the note says, I shrugged. Do you want to try it?
Yes, she nodded, her eyes eager. Is that okay with you?
Of course. I motioned for her to go ahead. Kate had done so much for me since I'd arrived in Kinsley. She'd caught me up on everything I needed to know about witches, and she was so excited to see if this worked. She should be the one to try first. Go ahead. She situated herself in front of the book, laid her hands on the cover, and closed her eyes.
How do we kill the creatures escaping from Kerberos?
She spoke slowly, as if that would help the book understand her. Then she opened her eyes and lifted her hands, looking down at the book in question.
Do I just open it?
She asked. I don't know any more than you do, I said. But yes, that seems like it would make sense.
Right.
She hovered over the book and took a deep breath, wringing her fingers together.
Here goes nothing.
She opened the book and flipped through the pages, her expression blank as she looked through them.
Well?
Danielle asked, tapping her fingers on her knee.
There's still nothing there.
Kate sat back on her heels and sighed.
It's empty.
So much for that, Chris said. Looks like we're back to where we were last night.
I'm not so sure about that.
Blake rested his elbows on his knees, staring at the book.
Nicole was the only one who could lift the book from the stand. Maybe she should ask it what's inside.
It's worth a try. I kneeled in front of the coffee table, closed the book, and placed my hands on the cover. How do we kill the creatures from Kerberos? I asked, repeating Kate's words exactly. Heat surged up my arm, feeling like it was coming straight from the book, and I took a sharp breath inward.
What? Kate asked. Did something happen?
I think so. I pulled my hands off the book, opened it, and gasped at what I saw. Now, instead of being blank, the first page had table of contents written in old text. One row down, it said, Crafting Your Weapons, page 4. The others gathered around me, Darius too, their mouths open as they saw the script on the page. We were all silent as I turned to page 4. Now, instead of being blank, it was full of text.
I need my reading glasses to see that,
Darius said, moving back to his armchair.
So would one of you like to read out loud?
I'll do it, I volunteered, barely taking a breath before starting to read. It says that, by now, the fire elemental should have begun welding the weapons found in the book he received in his clue. We all nodded, because Blake had done a fantastic job creating the weapons described in the book. He was a complete natural. My bow, Danielle's katana, and Chris's knives had all been crafted by Blake. Part of the curse put on the creatures in Kerberos to keep them there for all eternity is that if they ever find themselves back on Earth, they will be returned to Kerberos upon their death.
It makes sense, Kate said. Kerberos was supposed to be the most secure place to imprison them, even more secure than Tartarus. The Olympians never expected anyone to be able to escape, but of course they needed a backup plan in case it happened.
But there's something we can do to change it, right?
Chris asked. I'm getting to that, I said, continuing to read. However, if the correct ingredients are gathered and mixed by the elementals, the mixture can be coated onto their weapons. When used to fatally wound, these weapons will send the creature to limbo for 1 year. This will prevent them from being immediately returned to Kerberos.
Just as I suspected,
Darius mused.
It is impossible to permanently destroy the soul of any immortal creature. However, sending them to limbo will buy us time to figure out how to seal the portal. What are the ingredients you'll need?
They're all listed here, I said, finding them on the center of the page. There are three of them. The seed of the lotus fruit, the milk from the sacred immortal cattle of Helios, and the blood of the slain Hydra.
Sounds like we won't be able to walk into the grocery store and pick that up,
Chris said.
Where are we supposed to find that stuff?
I scanned the rest of the information in the book. It doesn't say, I said. There's a recipe under the ingredients, but no instructions about where we can find them. If they even exist. I sighed and placed the book back down, feeling defeated already.
They exist, Darius broke in. They can be found in the Aegean Sea, on the Greek islands of old mythology that have been hidden from human eyes for centuries.
You mean the islands that Odysseus visited in the Odyssey? Kate said.
Those places are real? I asked. Darius raised a bushy eyebrow.
After everything you've learned this past month, this shouldn't be surprising, he said. There are hundreds of islands in the Aegean Sea. Human scholars believe that the islands Odysseus visited in the Odyssey were imaginary. But they're wrong. The islands where the old mythology reigns exist. They're simply kept hidden from humans by illusions that make them appear deserted. But witches are able to see everything that's truly there. And according to the Book of Shadows, the five of you must journey there to collect the ingredients you'll need to create this formula for your weapons.
We can't just leave Kinsley to go to Greece, Kate said. Our parents would never let us do that. And what about school? And how would we even get to Greece at all?
February vacation starts on Friday, Darius said. That would be a perfect time for you to make the journey. I can use my powers to convince your parents that the five of you have been chosen for a school-sponsored trip to Washington, D.C. As for getting to Greece, I'm sure that the head elder of Greece will have no problem creating a portal so the five of you can get there. She, along with all of the head elders, knows all about your situation. I imagine she'll be happy to help in any way she can.
You can't make the portal yourself? I asked.
Oh, no.
Darius laughed, as if the thought were ridiculous.
Portal making is some of the most advanced magic there is. It requires the power of a head elder. And it's about time to introduce you to Hypatia. She's heard all about the five of you and is very eager to meet you.
Back up for a moment, Blake said,
and all heads turned to him.
Getting the lotus seeds and the milk from Helios's cattle sounds crazy, but feasible. But the blood of a slain Hydra? I know we've been practicing with our powers and weapons for a month, and we've gotten pretty good at it too. But the Hydra is one of the most dangerous creatures out there. Slaying it was one of Hercules's 12 labors. What if one of us gets hurt, or worse?
I didn't know if I was imagining it or not, but I could have sworn that his gaze drifted to mine when he'd said that last part. It was like he was saying that he didn't want me getting hurt. My cheeks heated at the thought, and I focused on my hands, unable to look at Blake, without my feelings for him showing on my face for everyone else to see.
Hercules was one person, Chris pointed out. We're five.
Actually, Hercules didn't slay the Hydra on his own, Kate said. He needed help from his nephew.
But neither of them had powers like ours.
Chris rubbed his hands together, his confidence not wavering.
We've got this.
Oh, I know we can slay the Hydra.
Blake crossed his arms, as if offended that anyone had thought he'd doubted our abilities.
We just need to make sure that we all get back here alive.
First of all, I'm glad to hear that you all have been paying attention during our Greek mythology class,
Darius said.
Secondly, you must remember that your powers and your ability to fight are gifts from the gods. Your progress this past month has been astounding. Not only do I believe that you're ready for this, but I believe that the book wouldn't send you on the mission if it didn't think you could succeed. You must retrieve these ingredients. It's the only way to make sure that the creatures who escape from Kerberos are sent away and unable to return to Earth before the portal is sealed.
Can you all back up a bit? I said, and everyone looked at me, waiting for what I had to say. I know that you've all been studying Greek mythology for your entire lives, but I've only been in the class since January, and I don't remember much from when I read the Odyssey last year. So can you please tell me, what are the seeds of the lotus fruit? What are Helios's immortal cattle? And what's a hydra? For a few seconds, everyone looked at me like I was crazy for not knowing this. Then Chris jumped in.
The land of the lotus eaters was my favorite part of the Odyssey,
he said.
It's an island where people live off the lotus fruit, which is basically a drug that makes them lazy. When Odysseus's men ate it, they decided they wanted to stay on the island forever, so they blew off their mission to return home.
So it sounds like getting the lotus fruit should be easy, I asked. A bunch of drugged-up locals shouldn't give us trouble. We'll just need to gather the fruit and get out of there.
The scent of the fruit is rumored to be quite tempting, so it might not be as easy as you think,
Darius said.
But yes, if you bring water infused with yellow energy onto the island, you should be able to stay focused on your mission and not get distracted by the scent of the fruit.
The milk of Helios's cattle shouldn't be hard either, Kate said. The only reason the island was a problem in the Odyssey was because Odysseus's men slaughtered the cattle for meat, despite knowing that harming them would mean angering Helios.
Odysseus's men sure messed up a lot,
Chris said.
Yeah, Kate laughed. They did. So as long as we don't kill any of Helios's cattle, we should be fine there.
What about the Hydra? I asked. That's the real challenge, isn't it?
The Hydra is a monster with five heads.
Blake pressed his fingers together, his gaze locked on mine.
The myths say that it has poison breath, but really, it's just its bite that's poisonous. The only way to kill it is to cut off its heads. But if you cut off a Hydra head, two grow back in its place.
Then we can't kill it by chopping off its heads, I said. There has to be another way.
Hercules figured out that if he immediately burned the open stumps, the heads couldn't grow back,
Blake said.
With my power over fire, that shouldn't be a problem.
Except there's the immortal head, Kate added. It breathes fire, and it can't be killed.
But Hercules killed the Hydra, didn't he? I asked.
Immortal head and all? With a special golden sword gifted to him by Athena, she said. We don't have one of those. I balanced my chin in my hands.
That does sound like a problem.
Why don't you ask the book?
Chris suggested.
Ask it what? If we can have a golden sword from Athena too?
Sure,
he shrugged.
It can't hurt to ask.
Even though it felt silly, I placed my hand on the book and asked, may we please have a weapon that will help us slay the Hydra? Instead of another entry appearing in the table of contents, writing began to form on the previously blank page on the left, as if someone were writing in the book at that very moment. You already have all of the weapons you need. I read the words out loud. Right afterward, they disappeared. We all watched the book closely, as if more writing might appear. But it didn't.
Well, that was vague, Kate finally said.
Maybe not, Blake said. I did use my power to forge our weapons, using the instructions in the book I received in my clue. Those weapons must be strong enough to defeat the Hydra. It would make sense with what the book just told us.
It would,
Chris agreed.
So, what do we do now?
We train, Danielle said, standing up. We have 1 week to study how Hercules slayed the Hydra and figure out how to do it ourselves.
So let's get to it.
We have no time to waste. With that, she headed to the training center in the basement, and we all followed her lead.
Chapter 15. A few days later, we gathered in the training center at the crack of dawn, ready to go. We had a few bags with changes of clothes and extra weapons, but other than that, we'd packed light. Most of the weapons we planned on using were already on us. Darius had connected to Hypatia on Skype, who was on board the yacht we would be taking through Greece, ready to create the portal.
As you know, it's already the afternoon here in Greece.
She spoke perfect English with only the trace of an accent.
Once you arrive, we'll get you settled in, and then we'll set sail to the first island on our journey. It'll take me about a minute to create the portal. Are you ready?
Yes, we said, although I fidgeted with the strap of my quiver. I wasn't sure if there was truly a way to feel ready for something like this.
Every second the portal remains open will take more of Hypatia's energy,
Darius reminded us.
She can keep a portal open for a maximum of 5 minutes, but please step through as quickly as possible. We want to help her preserve as much of her energy as she can.
If her portal will only last for 5 minutes, how come the portal to Kerberos can stay open? I asked.
Because that portal was created by the gods,
Darius answered.
Portals created by anyone who isn't a god can only stay open for a limited amount of time.
Hypatia stood up, and she held her hands in front of her, closing her eyes in deep concentration. A moment later, wind rushed through the room, and the wall in front of us shimmered, transforming into the circular whirlwind that would lead us to Greece. It was like looking through foggy glass. I could barely see the shape of a person and what seemed to be a living room on the other side.
It's safe to come through.
Hypatia spoke to us through Skype, since sound didn't travel through the portal.
I know that the five of you wish you had more time to prepare,
Darius said to us.
But in all my years, I've never seen power as strong as yours. You're ready for this, I know it.
Thank you, I said, blinking back tears. We wouldn't have been close to this ready if it weren't for you showing us the way.
May the gods be with you, he said. And I must admit, I've always been curious about the islands of old mythology. I'm looking forward to hearing your stories upon your return. Now, don't keep the portal open for any longer than necessary. Hypatia is waiting.
Blake stepped up to the portal, staring at it with determination.
I'll go first,
he said, walking through without hesitation. Danielle and I stepped forward at the same time, bumping into each other's shoulders. I moved aside, figuring it wasn't worth fighting with her over this.
I'm next, she said, tossing her hair behind her and walking through with as much confidence as Blake.
Once she was gone, I straightened my shoulders and gazed into the swirling portal. My stomach flipped. I'd never even left the country by plane before, so I had no idea what to expect. But I couldn't put it off for any longer. Here goes nothing, I said, taking a deep breath and stepping through. Chapter 16. It was just like the portal in the boulder to enter the cave, like passing through a mist machine at a theme park. My stomach flipped, like it does on a roller coaster, although my feet never left the ground. Once the prickly sensation left my skin, I opened my eyes and allowed myself to breathe again, stepping aside so the next person wouldn't crash into me. Once all five of us were through, Hypatia closed the portal, severing the one connection I had to home.
Welcome aboard the Artemis, she said, smiling at each of us.
She was young for a head elder, just a little older than my mom, which I already knew from when Darius had introduced her on Skype. She was also shorter than I'd expected, just barely 5 feet tall.
Let's get you all settled in, and then we'll sit down for lunch while we look over the map.
She continued.
It's only 1 hour to the land of the Lotus Eaters, but I want to make sure you're prepared before we set sail.
Sounds good, I said, looking around the yacht for the first time since getting here. The only boat I'd ever been on was the fishing boat that Blake had taken us on to find the siren. This was nothing like that. This was more like a house that just happened to be floating. We were gathered in what looked like a living room, except that the windows on one side looked out to the glittering blue sea, and the ones on the other to a hill dotted with white stucco homes. Hypatia led us down a flight of stairs to the bedrooms, where we dropped off our stuff. There were three main bedrooms, one for Hypatia, one for me, Kate, and Danielle, and the other for Blake and Chris.
The staff bedrooms are that way, she said, pointing to the other door. One of them is unoccupied, so you can use it to store your weapons.
Staff? I asked, raising my eyebrows.
You didn't think I was going to captain the yacht myself, she laughed.
I suppose I did think she would be captaining it herself, but since she seemed to think that would be a silly thought, I said nothing. So the boat is yours then? I asked instead.
For now, she said. It's given to the head elder of Greece, so we can easily travel to the various islands in the area. I also have a house on Santorini, the island you saw out the window when you arrived. Now, how about I show you the rest of the yacht?
She led us up to the top deck, where there was a bar stocked with sodas and snacks, a sitting area to look over the water, and the captain's chair. There was also a hot tub, although there was no water in it.
Too bad I didn't bring a bathing suit, Chris said.
This is a mission, not a vacation, Hypatia replied.
And while she was friendly, I could tell that she would be strict, too.
Lunch should be ready by now. We have about 1 hour until we'll arrive at the land of the Lotus Eaters. And here in Greece, we love our mealtimes. So let's eat and discuss our game plan.
Chapter 17. The chef served us salad for lunch. It didn't have lettuce in it, which I found strange, but I ate it anyway. It was mostly tomatoes and cucumbers and cheese, and it was really fresh and delicious. Hopefully he didn't notice that I avoided the olives. At the end of lunch, the yacht pulled closer to a small island, and we gathered on the deck so we could get a look at it. But there wasn't much to look at. The island seemed to be deserted. The sparkling blue water crashed onto a sandy beach, which led to a forested hill. Seagulls flew overhead, but they were the only signs of life. I didn't know what I'd expected, but given that these were the magical islands of old mythology, it hadn't been this. "This is it?" I asked, unable to keep the disappointment from my tone. I thought that people were supposed to live here.
They do, Hypatia said. We're keeping our distance from them because the scent of the lotus fruit can be quite intoxicating. We couldn't risk getting too close and having myself or the crew affected, so we'll anchor here and you'll take the dinghy to the beach. Walk about 30 minutes around the cove and you should find the locals.
That makes sense, Kate said, turning to us. Remember, all we're doing is gathering the fruit and coming back here. Do not eat the fruit under any circumstances. If you start to feel affected by the smell of the fruit, drink the yellow energy water in your bag, and you'll be brought back to your senses.
The locals should provide you with the fruit, Hypatia reminded us. They love the lotus fruit, so they'll be anxious to share. All you need to do is fill your bags with as much of it as you can and return back here.
Shouldn't be a problem, Chris said. Especially since the locals are all doped up on lotus. It sounds like they'll have no clue what's going on.
But we have our weapons, just in case.
Blake rested his hand on his gun, which he'd hidden under his jacket.
If you haven't returned once the sun has set, I'll come looking for you, Hypatia said. Hopefully it won't come to that. For now, one of the crew members will take you from the yacht to the beach. Once there, follow the beach around the cove to find the lotus eaters.
Good luck,
and I'll see you soon.
With that, we piled into the dinghy, and we were off. Chapter 18. We strolled along the beach, listening to the waves crash against the shore, lost in our own thoughts. Between school, training, and homework, I barely had much time to think anymore. Could it be possible that my dad, Apollo, was watching me now? I'd assumed he was watching me back in Kinsley, since he'd known to leave that package on my windowsill. He hadn't replied to my letter, but now that we were here, in the ancient lands, would he finally show himself to me? If he had time to leave me presents and letters, surely he could stop by for a short visit, just to introduce himself. Then my thoughts were interrupted by hollow, rhythmic music that sounded like it came from bongos. We all stopped in our tracks, staring ahead at where it was coming from.
"Is that a drum circle?"
Danielle asked.
"It's coming from that way."
Chris pointed forward, running around the next turn.
"I see them."
He came back around and motioned for us to hurry. His face lit up with a huge smile, as if he'd discovered a buried treasure.
"This way."
We followed him around the corner, and in the distance, I saw what appeared to be a giant beach party. People of all ages and heritages danced around a drum circle, played games of volleyball, surfed on the sea, and lounged around in hammocks. They didn't seem to have a care in the world. We stood there, watching them, not saying a word. Then, a young boy who couldn't have been older than 10 pointed at us and shouted, "New visitors!" I froze, my hand going to my bow. The others reached for their weapons, too. The boy ran toward us, but an older woman in a kimono followed him, placing her hands on his shoulders to stop him.
"We were just about to start a bonfire," she said with a grin, as if she'd been expecting us.
"Come, join us." "Yes, join us," the others chorused, to the beat of the bongos. They kept repeating their request, the goofy smiles not leaving their faces. They all were dressed from different times. One man wore a dirty toga. A woman wore a tattered medieval gown. A teen boy wore a t-shirt and board shorts. And another man wore a Scottish kilt, among many others. It was like the strangest Halloween party ever.
"What do you think?" Danielle asked, her hand still on her katana.
"They seem friendly," I said. "And we're supposed to talk to them to get the fruit. So I don't think it'll do us any good to walk over there brandishing our weapons." A little girl ran up to us, wearing a nightgown that had probably once been white under all the dirt, laughing as she kicked up piles of sand.
"Come play with us," she said, her ringlets bouncing around her face. "You can help us light the campfire."
"I think I can help with that,"
Blake said, flicking on his lighter and balancing a fireball in his hand. The girl stopped in her tracks and looked up at him in wonder, the fire lighting up her face.
"Wow,"
she said, her tongue practically hanging out as she admired the flames.
"Can I try?"
"You better not."
Blake closed his hands so the fire snuffed out, and the girl pouted.
"You wouldn't want to burn yourself," he explained. "But I can definitely help you with that bonfire."
She reached for his sleeve, tugging him towards the group. He laughed and looked back at us.
"Come on,"
he said, allowing her to pull him away.
"They seem harmless."
I wasn't so sure about that. Their goofy grins and unison way of speaking put me on edge. But Hypatia had instructed us to interact with the locals, so as we made our way toward the group, I listened to Kate as she filled us in on her observations about the people here.
"They've all gotten lost here during different periods of history," she said. "That's why they're wearing clothes from different eras. Once they're here, they must stay the same age forever."
"Like the Lost Boys in Neverland?"
Chris asked.
"Exactly,"
Kate nodded and ran to catch up with the girl.
"Hi there,"
she said, perching on her knees and smiling.
"What's your name?"
The girl paused for a second, as if she had to think to remember.
Marion, she finally said, and then she grinned, as if proud of herself for knowing her own name. Her two front teeth were missing from her smile.
And what year were you born? Kate asked.
I don't know.
She giggled, as if the question were silly.
Come on, let's play.
She took off toward the drum circle, sand flying behind her feet as she ran. Sadness filled my chest as I watched her hurry away. Had she truly been on this island for so long that she'd forgotten what year she was born? Her nightgown didn't look like anything modern. It could have been from 100 years ago. Her name was old-fashioned, too. Kate was right. It was like she'd been frozen in time.
Everyone here was. Goosebumps prickled over my arms at the thought. This island was a ghost town, and we were outsiders being welcomed in.
This place is giving me the creeps, Kate said, once the girl was out of earshot.
Me too, I agreed, glad that I wasn't the only one who felt that way. Let's get the fruit and get out of here.
Chapter 19.
We have to act like we want to hang out with them, Kate said, as we walked closer to the drum circle. It won't take long until they ask us if we want to try the lotus fruit. When they do, we have to say that it smells delicious, but we're in a hurry and would love to take some for the road, I completed her sentence. We've been over this. It'll be fine. Like Chris said, they're so doped up on lotus that they don't seem to care about anything but having fun. When we arrived at the drum circle, Chris was already sitting down, banging on a bongo.
This is actually pretty fun, he said,
although it wouldn't have taken a professional musician to tell that his drumming was completely offbeat.
Your friend should try too,
a man next to him, who was wearing an Egyptian headdress, said.
Come join us.
I loved music, but my talents were with the guitar, not with bongos. So I looked around, searching for the others. Blake was helping Marion and some of the other kids gather wood for a campfire. Danielle had grabbed a surfboard and was running toward the ocean. They both were smiling and laughing as if they were having the time of their lives.
I guess I'll join the drum circle, Kate said with a shrug.
Wonderful,
the Egyptian man said, scooting over to make room for her between himself and an Indian woman whose arms were covered in beautiful henna tattoos. I think I'll check out the volleyball courts, I finally said. See if they could use an extra player.
Have fun, dear.
A woman in a flapper outfit waved at me and inhaled on her cigarette holder, blowing smoke in my face as I passed by her. I breathed it in. And the smell of the smoke was so delicious that it made me stop in my tracks. I'd never smelled something so wonderfully sweet. My favorite food had always been chocolate, but I imagined that if chocolate were put next to this delicious smell, the chocolate would be ignored completely. I took another deep breath, inhaling the lingering smoke, wanting the amazing aroma of it to stay with me forever.
What were you saying, dear?
The flapper woman asked, blowing out more of the intoxicating smoke. I inched closer to her, savoring every bit of it.
You were going to play volleyball?
Yes. I smiled at the thought of playing volleyball. I'd never played before, but it was similar to tennis, so it couldn't be hard, right? Volleyball sounds fun. I'll see you all soon. I waved to Kate and Chris, flashed them a grin, and bounced over to the volleyball courts.
I was halfway there when I saw him. He threw the volleyball in the air and served, the sun glistening off his perfectly tan body. He had silky blonde hair, and he was so gorgeous that he looked like a movie star. Then he turned around and smiled at me. His eyes were clear blue, like the sky, and the way he was looking at me, as if I was the only person in his world, made my heart feel like it had transformed into fluttering butterflies in my chest.
Hi there, he said, his accent making me melt. I didn't know where it was from. England, maybe? Care to join our game? I blinked and glanced over my shoulder, making sure he was actually talking to me. There was no one else there.
Yes, I'm talking to you.
He laughed, and it sounded like musical bells.
I'm Ethan.
That's my twin sister, Rachel. He pointed to the girl across the net, who was equally blonde, tall, and gorgeous.
And you are?
Nicole, I answered, needing to remind myself to breathe.
Nice to meet you, Nicole.